and knowledge and wisdom, right? So this is a very beautiful hadith. It alludes to the virtues of Imam Hussein. And when we hear these virtues, we become even more sorrowful, and we weep even with more intensity for the loss of Imam Hussein alayhi salam on this day, and also the loss of his companions. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at Imam Hussein alayhi salam in his own words. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
The Spotlight. The stock warning from the Bank of England on the UK's economy. Not only will the UK economy face a contraction, we'll enter a year-long recession. This has forced the bank to raise interest rates to record high, which has not been done in 27 years. How will the Brits deal with this, which includes a high cost of living? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at what the UK government can do to deal with this economic challenge. This is while there's really no government in place in order to tackle this head-on. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight first. Historian and journalist Tony Gosselin joins us from Bristol. Also joining us, economist and author Steve Keane, who joins us from London. Welcome to you both. Steve Keane, let me first start with you and get an idea about this warning from the Bank of England. It's not obviously, it's pretty bad in its content. A recession to last until next year, which you can tell us the definition would be five consecutive quarters of a contraction, each quarter to be 3 months in duration. Tell us more about that and how the Bank of England can be so sure into the future that the UK is going to be experiencing this inflation or recession.
They can be fairly sure about the inflation as for the level of contraction. Did you say five quarters then?
Is it
five quarters of negative growth?
Isn't that what it is until next year?
That's the length of time. The usual, like the informal definition of a recession is two consecutive negative quarters. To get five is a serious recession. So I think it's quite feasible that these sorts of falls are going to occur because we've had two major forces that kept the economy ticking during COVID. One was enormous government deficits, which generate an identical private sector surplus, giving people money to spend, which they did, which is why the recession was so short-lived. Now the government's talking about trying to balance its books, which is a stupid thing for the government to be focusing upon, but if they do reduce their size of the deficit, they also reduce the amount of money they're injecting into private bank accounts. People have less money, and there's a downturn there. And then with higher interest rates, which are now passing through to mortgages, credit cards, and so on, that higher cost of money is going to discourage people from taking out credit. So rather than credit going very strongly, as it did also during the COVID boom, we could now see credit turning negative. And that's what caused the Great Recession or the global financial crisis back in 2008. So we're going to get potentially a double whammy of a government-induced recession from high rates and from cutting back on its spending on top of a private sector one caused by a reduction in credit.
Okay, what we are also seeing here, Tony Gosselin, not to get too, I guess, technical in a sense, is that we're seeing how the household incomes are not keeping up, in a sense, with the inflation. So they don't have that purchasing power. And that is going to obviously have a dent not only on the economy, but also just in terms of the quality of life that people are going to be experiencing based on what we are looking at, and inflation to, well, it's, the Bank of England says it's going to peak at 13.5%. But people are having a really hard time as we speak. Tell us how this is going to pan out when it comes to just people's lives in terms of what is being now announced by the Bank of England.
Well, look, Steve Keen has just explained what's going on very, very in a very, very concise fashion there. I think what we need to understand, though, is that something really big is going on. It reminds me very much of the West's reaction, the NATO countries' reaction to the Russians going into Ukraine. Is the actual solution to this, the Bank of England increasing interest rates, seems to be almost designed to make the problem worse. There's something very perverse seems to be happening. I think we're basically at war, is an economic war taking place, and that war is between traditional, sane, sensible forms of industrial capitalism, where the government acts as a kind of mediator and the central banks act as mediators in order to ensure that there's no ability for private interests to profiteer and to get into infrastructure, where basically they just sit back and reel in as much money and start price fixing as much as they want. And this new form, well, it's newer form of capitalism, which is finance capitalism, which basically means money is your god. And you can do anything with that money. If you can bribe your way into a government office and take over a government service, you can do it. And that's the war which is going on in Britain at the moment. And it does seem as if the finance capitalists are winning here. But Steve and I are both, you will see neither of us on British television talking about this. This is, of course, what British people and policymakers need to hear. And so that's interesting in itself that we are completely shut out of that debate. I have to thank you at Press TV for even allowing this to take place, that the British people can then start to see. Anyway, beyond that, you asked me about what the British people are going to be doing over this. And I've been talking to rail workers today who are having a particularly hard time, and having a little chat to them. It's quite obvious to me that what's going on is... Sorry, I've lost your connection completely. Sorry.
No problem. Well, while you fix that, let me come to you, Steve Keen. This fall in living standards is said to be the longest and deepest fall on record, and it's the way it was described, that one of the biggest reasons for that are the energy bills that are set to triple. Triple. I mean, that's a lot. How does that translate for households that can't afford to, for example, pay it? You know what I mean? What was going to happen?
Yeah. Well, there are people who already were very close to the red line in the UK. The low-income earners in the UK, I don't know how they survived, frankly. Given my own background, I was earning about £90,000 a year when I was in London, which it ended up being £4,000 a month, and half of that went in my accommodation, and the remainder had to go on living. And I found it challenging compared to the same income back in Australia, where I was quite comfortable. That I know first-year teachers, first-year nurses, first-year firemen, and so on, are on wages between £20,000 and £25,000 a year. Now, they can't even imagine living in London, and the costs for them in the rest of the country were already high. Trebling the cost of energy is going to mean for a lot of those people they will not be able to afford energy, and they will therefore have to consider things like wearing, gloves inside their own homes to avoid freezing during winter. And they certainly can't do anything to fight the increase in temperature when you get the enormous temperatures that are coming through courtesy of global warming now. London recording, England recording 40 degrees, which is literally unheard of in its historic record. So they're going to suffer very badly. And I think there's going to be an enormous amount of angst out of this and lots of strike action over it, but very little chance to change the direction of government policy and very little chance to increase their wages as well.
Well, why not? Why wouldn't the government change its policy?
The government has been following the wrong policy for 40 years. It's very unlikely to wake up, oh dear, we've been doing it wrongly, let's do it the right way now. They still think the government should be behaving like a household and trying to save money every year. Now, the government is not a household. No other household that I know of has the right to create money, but the government does. So if the government creates money, that money turns up in our bank accounts, and that requires the government to run a deficit. Now, the English government has been obsessed by running a surplus. looking at the accounting of the economy from just their point of view and thinking if they pay a surplus, they can pay their debt down and they see that as responsible. But because what happens with the government is the mirror image of what happens with the non-government, if the government runs a surplus of $1 trillion, the private sector runs a deficit of $1 trillion. We're not talking about numbers that high, but fundamentally it's a seesaw. One's up, the other's down. The average is zero. So if the government is trying to save money, it's causing the private sector to dissave. Now, they've been doing that nonetheless for 40 years. They still haven't woken up. I really have no confidence that they will ever wake up over this. So they're doing the wrong thing, and yet they're thinking doing the right thing. Humans' capacity to self-delude cannot be underestimated.
Uh-huh. So the lesson I'm learning from you here, and hopefully the viewers, is that the government shouldn't have a surplus because that money should actually be flowing into the people, average people, to take out and spend into the economy. So having a surplus is not a great idea. Okay, so the cost of living crisis, Tony Gosling, this is what the Bank of England has said, that it's going to continue throughout next year and only begin to ease in the year 2024. And then, of course, along with that, the UK economy contracting for all this time. 2024 is 2022. The timeline there is so long. How are people going to survive?
No, I know, but you see, the thing is, these predictions by the Bank of England have a rather a nasty habit of in a couple of years' time, they say, well, sorry, we got that wrong. It's going to be continuing even beyond that, this recession. I mean, I think really what we're looking at here is a deliberate sabotaging of the economy. The thing is that there are people that benefit from this. You have to understand this is how finance capitalism works. What they do is they wreck countries and then they pick up the pieces for next to nothing. And that's what they're doing to Britain now. Many of these Anglo-Zionist Empire great financiers have been doing this around the world. They've been wrecking countries and then buying up for cheap. And also, of course, they make a lot of money on these reconstruction contracts. And one of the big effects of the enormous green taxes that have been being put onto fuel here in Britain is that it's driving small firms out of business. Many small firms in Bristol, we've been checking out the tax which is being put onto people. They say it's a clean air tax, but against their own figures of 40 micrograms of nitrogen dioxide per square meter. This is the amount that they use to measure whether it's a dangerous level or not. The Bristol figures are actually below that level as an average through the year, which is what the government has said. And yet they're imposing this new toll, effectively. That's what it is anyway. The super rich don't pay the toll because they all have brand new cars, which don't pay the toll. And even disabled people have to pay these tolls. So what we're really looking at is an embattled criminal elite, I think. And their plans are failing around the world. Their economic plans are failing. And so they're turning on their own population and seeing them now as a kind of milch cow in order to squeeze them for as much wealth as out of them as they possibly can. And when they collapse these small businesses, this of course, plays into the hands of the giants like Amazon, who I noticed, by the way, today in Britain, we've had one of the first proper strikes at Amazon, where all of the Amazon workers who were offered 35 pence pay increases, you know, tiny amounts of money by the company, have just downed tools. And at one point, actually, they were locked up illegally within the workplace and they couldn't leave. So this is what we're dealing with. I think a fascistic system where, and I use that word advisedly, because this is fascism. When big corporations think they can rule the roost, do what they want without any kind of recourse to government or law, they just see then the legal actions against them as a cost of doing business. And so they just do what they want. And that's what I think we're seeing. These big companies now think, well, the more small businesses we can ruin and destroy, the bigger our control of the markets will be. And that's, you're quite right to point out at the beginning that we're in this kind of interregnum here in Britain where Boris has gone. We've got probably a couple of people possibly taking over, most likely Liz Truss, who is a total puppet. So there is no real government. You're quite right. And the big corporations love it like that. The big oil companies, the energy companies have just brought in record profits more than ever before. They are basically running the show here. And the people are cannon fodder to them.
Okay, well, let's look at the reasons that have been cited. First of all, how this has been described, Steve Keen: high inflation, low growth, soaring energy bills. And it's been described as the main driver behind that overall is the Ukraine conflict. Now, do you agree that this is just because of the Ukraine conflict? I mean, was UK's economy doing well before the Ukraine conflict, or were there remnants prior to that?
There are basically three major factors that are coming together all at once. One is that we have pushed, we've ignored the warning of the limits to growth 50 years ago and continued pushing our energy consumption. So now we're consuming probably four times as much as we were back in 1972. And that means we've exhausted cheap oil. We're now exhausting even unconventional oil. So the cost of energy is rising, and that's inevitably going to continue happening. We, at the same time, we have had a period of extended low inflation courtesy of globalization. So particularly American corporations, but also UK corporations, have outsourced manufacturing to China, which reduced costs dramatically for a long, long time, but also made the manufacturing sector very fragile because there's an enormous supply chain. And if that gets disrupted at any point, then costs rise. And of course, COVID has dramatically disrupted the supply chain, particularly from China. Then we have this period of ongoing austerity by governments where they falsely believe they should save money, but rather than saving money, what they're doing is creating not enough money, and therefore the economy grows more slowly because of a lack of government of money for turnover. So those three factors are all coming together at once, and the most important one, I think, for the long term is a rising cost of production. And in that situation, if you want to squeeze inflation out of the economy, there's only two other factors you can affect. You can reduce wages, which were already at trivial levels in the UK, or you can reduce the markups that firms put on their input costs. And that is something which the firms have resisted for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Now, the interest rates are likely to increase the cost of business, not reduce it. So I think the government is finding out how impotent it is now with the tools it's chosen to use.
The 2008 financial crisis, obviously, Tony Gosling, had a very deep effect and impact not only across the world but also on the UK. Now, this one, which has been described as a recession that's going to last, it's the longest downturn since the 2008 financial crisis. And the way that one analyst has described it is that it's going to be as deep. It's not set to be as deep as 14 years ago, but it's going to last just as long. My question is, do you agree? And do you think that, according to some, that the UK actually did it claw itself out of the 2008 financial crisis all the way, or is it still experiencing it?
Well, look, I'm sure Steve will agree that the reaction to the 2008 bailouts, this was really where massive amounts of public money went to save zombie banks, and they shouldn't really have done. They should have just simply been allowed to collapse. But what happened there was the end of capitalism. It was the death of capitalism, because what they did is they resurrected these banks that should have just been allowed to collapse. And what that's done is it's now compounding the problem again and again. What we're seeing is governments. In fact, there was an enormous bailout during the COVID crisis, as people may know, just before the COVID crisis in 2019, which the COVID crisis was quite successfully hid. And so we're not getting the proper figures about how much public money is going into propping up these dead and dying banks. And that's, I think, what's going on. And actually, on the ground here, what we've got, of course, is we've got people's living standards being eroded in all sorts of ways, particularly through these rising energy prices, which I'm not sure, as Steve suggested there, is just part of a market force that's going on. There are enormous green taxes now coming in. We've got something in Britain called the RTFO, which went up 20 pence a litre on diesel and petrol over Christmas. But the fuel companies actually covered that up by dropping their price the same day by an equivalent amount. So there's a sneaky bringing in of these so-called green taxes into fuel. And one of the things that Boris did before he went back in 2021 was actually to refuse this new increase, these green taxes, in the cabinet saying that, well, hang on, because this is going to cause inflation. Well, of course, it has caused inflation. But the thing is, they did it anyway. They basically ignored the what was the discussion in cabinet, and the parts of the government, the Department for Transport, the Treasury, colluded with the big oil companies to bring the taxes in anyhow. So there are all sorts of reasons for this, but the main problem is that people's living standards are being eroded. That's why we're seeing industrial action on the railways, which is the biggest union in the country, who actually represent the left in Britain. They represent the political opposition to the Tory party, really, because the Labour Party is simply doing absolutely nothing about all this. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. That is to say, people simply saying, getting organised and simply saying, well, we refuse to work if you're going to be, destroying our jobs and also eroding our ability to pay. But the long and short of this is, in a nutshell, is this is the Great Reset. I believe that is exactly what's going on here. This is what was talked about in 2020 and 21 by the World Economic Forum. What they really want to do is to collapse the economy and replace it with their own version. So this is what's called disaster capitalism. This is what Naomi Klein called disaster capitalism. But they're doing it on their own people now. They've been doing it around the world for years. Now they've turned on their own kind.
That was discussed at the WEF. Do you agree with this, Steve Keen, that this is the Great Reset?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I've met quite a few of the people that are supposed to be running this conspiracy, and they couldn't plan lunch. Okay? The extent to which people think a conspiracy is causing all this, yes, of course, these people are conspiring. Yes, of course, they're trying to get outcomes that suit themselves. Do they understand the system they're managing? Not in the slightest. So they end up causing catastrophes, and what you get is one disaster to another, and they try to maneuver their way through. They've got more power, of course, than a worker or a member of a trade union has, so they can come out on top as a result of it. But to put this down as a result of some sort of plan, as I said, they couldn't plan lunch. So I think it's ridiculous to blame it on a conspiracy, but to correct it, blame on people being in charge of a system they don't understand, and it's being hit by forces they have ignored for 50 years, the limits of growth in particular, the wrong way to run monetary policy, bring it all together. It's sure. I could use lots of very colourful terms here to describe what's going on, but none of them involve a power elite knowing what they're doing.
Well, we need to find out, not we, the UK and the incoming administration, whoever's going to be the PM, needs to figure out what to do. Is there a game plan? Tony Gosling, 30 seconds.
Well, what they need to do, I think, is to bring most of the infrastructure of the country, including the railways, etc., into public ownership. And they can do that very easily, very cheaply, by just simply not renewing franchises. This is just happening naturally anyway. For example, on the railways, we've had several of the companies that have been running regional railways collapse anyway, and the government's had to take them in hand themselves. But those organisations, including, by the way, I think, finance needs to be seen as a public utility, as it is in China and Russia and places like that, where the core of the financial system is managed by the government. That's why we elect them, in order to run the country.
Okay.
The worst thing in the world is when all these private businesses take these over. This was started by Thatcher, of course. We need to renationalise these things.
Very well. Thank you for that, Tony Gosling from Bristol, historian and journalist. Steve Keen from London. Thank you, economist and author. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitahue and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful. who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قال ألم نربك فينا وليدا ولبثت فينا من عمرك سنين
Pharaoh said, Did we not raise you among us as a child, and you remained among us for years of your life?
وفعلت فعلتك التي فعلت وأنت من الكافرين
And then you did your deed which you did, and you were of the ungrateful.
قال فعلتها إذا وأنا من الضالين
Moses said, I did it then, while I was of those astray.
ففررت منكم لما خفتكم فوهب لي ربي حكما وجعلني من المرسلين
So I fled from you when I feared you. Then my Lord granted me wisdom and prophethood and appointed me as one of the messengers.
وتلك نعمة تمنها علي أن عبدت بني إسرائيل
And is this a favor of which you remind me, that you have enslaved the children of Israel?
The 22nd verse of this chapter says, وتلك نعمة تمنها علي أن عبدت بني إسرائيل And is it a favor with which you reproach me that you have enslaved the children of Israel? Here is the continuation of what Prophet Moses was answering Pharaoh. First, in the 20th verse, he started saying, فَعَلْتُهَا إِذَنْ وَأَنَا مِنَ الضَّالِّينَ I was, as you thought, in error. فَفَرَرْتُ مِنْكُمْ لَمَّا خِفْتُكُمْ So I fled from you when I feared you. فَوَهَبَ لِي رَبِّي حُكْمًا وَجَعَلَنِي مِنَ الْمُرْسَلِينَ And because of that, my Lord granted me wisdom and made me one of the messengers. And وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْ Here, Prophet Moses is trying to answer the claim of Pharaoh when he said, أَلَمْ نُرَبِّكَ فِينَا وَلِيدًا وَلَبِثْتَ فِينَا مِنْ عُمُرِكَ سِنِينَ The 18th verse, as I may remember, that Pharaoh said, Did we not cherish you as a child among us, and you tarried among us for many years of your life? Here, Moses is answering with harshness and severity the reproaches and arrogances of Pharaoh, to answer back the reproach of Pharaoh about rearing Moses in his childhood. Moses protests and decisively says, وَتِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلِ Is it a favor with which you reproach me, that you have enslaved the children of Israel? Of course, it is correct that the hand of events brought Moses to palace of Pharaoh, And he, ala nabina wa alihi wa alayhi wa sallam, was unwillingly brought up in this place. And this shows that the might of Allah is there forever. But one must see that the main factor of this affair is something else. I mean, why was not Moses brought up in his real home with his father and mother carrying him? Of course, the answer is clear. Pharaoh held the children of Israel captive. He killed many boys and let girls to live for being slave girls. And this great oppression that Pharaoh committed caused Moses' mother to put her son in a wooden box and placing it in Nile River in order to protect her child. It was Allah's will that this small ship came near Pharaoh's palace. And it was Pharaoh's great oppression that made Moses indebted to this reproach and deprived him of his clean parental home and placed him in Pharaoh's defiled palace. With this commentary, the relation of Moses with Pharaoh's question gets clear. And this is, as you saw, a very decisive answer. قَالَ أَلَمْ نُرَبِّكَ فِينَا وَلِيدًا وَلَبِثْتَ فِينَا مِنْ عُمُرِكَ سِنِينَ The Pharaoh says, We cherished you as a child. You tarried among us for many years, but here is the answer. تِلْكَ نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْ أَنْ عَبَّدْتَ بِنِي إِسْرَائِيلِ You enslaved many children of Israel, and this is a kind of favor that you think you can reproach me with? The reproaches and arrogance should be answered with harshness and complete severity.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Now with the answer of Moses, we can move on to talk about another aspect. Another possible commentary is about this verse, that the purpose of Moses was that his rearing by Pharaoh could be as a blessing compared with those tyranny and cruelties Pharaoh's imposed upon the children of Israel. And it is understood that this blessing is a drop in the ocean. What blessing is it that Pharaoh points to while he has done many oppressions, many crimes beside it? I mean, the other possible meaning is that Moses is trying to say that of course this is a blessing. نِعْمَةٌ تَمُنُّهَا عَلَيْهِ But at the same time, you enslaved many children of Israel, so this ni'mah is not a real one. This cannot be counted as a blessing. There are some other points regarding this verse, dear listeners, that we will, God willing, discuss. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
With her trip to Taiwan this week, Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi set off a firestorm in offending China. From the self-governing territory, Pelosi criticized Beijing and its leadership, while carefully outlining the limitations of the U.S. commitment to defend the island.
In the Congress, House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans are committed to the security of Taiwan in order to have Taiwan be able to most effectively defend themselves. But it also is about our shared values of democracy and freedom and how Taiwan has been an example to the world in that regard.
China had warned the U.S. and Pelosi against the visit, as it views Taiwan as a breakaway province that will one day rejoin a one China. In response to Pelosi's Taiwan visit, China's People's Liberation Army on Thursday began the largest military exercises targeting Taiwan in decades.
Tension in the situation across the Taiwan Strait is solely caused by the U.S. side. The root cause is Pelosi's selfish and willful interference with Taiwan, which seriously violates the One China principle. The Chinese government has the right to take all necessary and justified actions to firmly safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity.
In South Korea, Pelosi met with the Speaker of the National Assembly. Seoul has been careful to balance its U.S. military alliance and relations with its largest trading partner, China. Pelosi spoke with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol on the phone, but the two did not meet, an outcome widely viewed as a snub of the third-ranked U.S. official. House Speaker Pelosi later stopped in Japan, where she met with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. China later Friday announced sanctions against Pelosi and the suspension on several issues of cooperation with the United States. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Britain is on the brink of a recession as deep as the 90s and as long as the 2008 financial crisis, a bleak projection by the country's central bank. The Bank of England says it's trying to stem skyrocketing prices by raising interest rates by half a point to 1.75%, saying the measure couldn't come soon enough.
If we don't bring inflation back to target, bearing in mind the huge scale of the energy shock we're seeing, if we don't bring it back to target, and if we get these so-called second-round effects entering in, it's going to get worse.
It was news that sent a chill among the public, people already feeling the squeeze on their finances.
Leaving out of my home and all the bills on, I have to pay it by myself. I'm on minimum wages as a cleaner, and, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do anyway.
The salary is still the same, and the prices are going up, far too up. That's the reason what I have a concern about is.
The Bank of England predicts the economy is going to shrink, with recession starting this year and lasting all the way through the next. That plus the biggest decline in living standards on record and another sharp rise in household energy bills. The bank pins the eye-watering energy price hike largely on rising gas prices owing to the war in Ukraine. But there are other reasons.
It's a whole plethora of reasons coming together. So you can actually look at the effect of the pandemic, what that impacted on manufacturing and consumerability, global trade and supply chains, and the underlying cost of rising commodities, food and other areas. So this is a Gordian knot of elements coming together. Now, untie that knot, and that's what they're going to have trouble doing.
The writing had already been on the wall. Many experts did warn the UK was behind the curve in dealing with rising inflation. Britons are going to see their energy, fuel, and food bills increase significantly over the next year. Charities are warning of a catastrophe this winter. There's talk of creating warm spaces to provide heated sites for those unable to afford their energy bills.
This deluge of bad economic news comes as the country awaits a new prime minister, and that is a month away. But whoever they may be, their job has just become way harder. Cyprus is up London.
The Israeli regime has sealed its crossings with the Gaza Strip since Tuesday, further exacerbating the humanitarian situation in the impoverished territory. Currently, there are two Israeli-controlled crossings into the tiny coastal territory. the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing, located on the southernmost tip of the Gaza Strip, and the Erez pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza. The crossings have been partially operating since Israel imposed a tight blockade on Gaza in 2007.
The Israel closure of the crossings for the third day has serious, severe implications on the lives of the Palestinians in Gaza Strip. We are calling on the international community for immediate actions to pressure Israel to lift the blockade in Gaza.
The impoverished coastal territory already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Most Gazans also depend on handouts from international aid agencies to survive.
Closing the crossing point from the Israeli occupation, it's a collective punishment. It's part of blackmail against Palestinian people. Over 2 million people living in Gaza, they are living in the huge jail. The social and economic situation so deteriorated.
For 15 years, the Israeli regime has kept an illegal and inhumane closure on the Gaza Strip, affecting the lives of more than 2 million Palestinians and restricting their freedom of movement.
Gaza crisis, due to the Israeli continuous blockade for 15 years, suffering from serious implications on the economy, on the humanitarian conditions, the employment, food insecurity, poverty increased to unprecedented percentages.
Tel Aviv's move to shut down the crossings will further complicate living conditions in the impoverished territory. According to human rights groups, the Israeli blockade has wreaked havoc on the economy of Gaza and worsened its humanitarian conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
French President Emmanuel Macron has reached the 100-day mark of his second term, and the contrast with the bold newcomer of 2017 couldn't be more different. Macron is being described as distant, burnt out, weary, and hesitant, but the adjective he may like the least is powerless. 2 months into his new mandate, Macron experienced his worst failure as a politician. His young political party failed to win a parliamentary majority. A president used to ignoring the legislative branch so far hasn't shown much political skill or interest in the tough work of cobbling together successful majorities to get his policies approved. Many believe Macron may call for new elections as early as this year or rule even more often by executive decree. Both options are sure to create major opposition in a new parliament as well as social unrest.
Since the legislative elections, France is in a new political era dominated by uncertainty. Macron has been acting as if he can easily find a majority in parliament on a bill-by-bill basis, but I think that has very little chance to work. It's very likely that in less than a year he'll dissolve parliament and call for new legislative elections.
Polls show that, unlike most winners of presidential elections, Macron has not benefited from the usual honeymoon or grace period. Just like in 2017, Macron was mainly elected to block the far right. But he's no longer a political unknown without a track record. Instead, he's a polarizing figure who has been tarnished worldwide by his authoritarian repression of the Yellow Vest protest movement, and who is perceived domestically as wanting very different things than the average person. Economic stagnation is already upon the Eurozone, and depression could be next. Political stagnation appears to have taken root in France, with perhaps even a depressed president. 100 days into Macron's second term, it's a summer of silent discontent in France, with possibly explosive autumn unrest looming. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Black-clad mourners beating on their chests and listening to elegies in honor of a man who lived 14 centuries ago but continues to touch the hearts of Muslims. Mass processions are underway in Iran to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein. Iranians from all walks of life have been participating in the ceremonies to pay respect to their Imam.
The love of Ashura's philosophy should be
gathered and extended in around the world. I believe that because it's not just the love for Muslims or specifically Shias, I believe it's a love that everyone can learn and everyone can understand, because it's not just a matter of your religion, it's a matter of a man that sacrificed everything in his path for his beliefs.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Imam Hussein was a true freedom seeker who stood against the unjust and corrupt ruler of his time, Yazid. We as Muslims remember him every year to safeguard what our Imam stood for.
Imam Hussein was the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Based on Islamic references, the Shia Imam and 72 of his companions were killed in the lunar month of Muharram in 680 AD in modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala by the forces of the second Umayyad Caliph Yazid. The asymmetrical battle was triggered after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for he believed that the Caliph did not exercise true Islam as taught by the Prophet.
The philosophy of Imam Hussein's uprising was to expose the corruption that was entrenched in the ruling system. It was only after Yazid's troops spilled the blood of Imam Hussein when people realized Yazid's animosity toward Islam. And that set the start of the collapse of the Umayyad dynasty.
People believe Imam Hussein's sacrifices saved Islam from distortion and manipulation by Yazid. And this is just one reason why his love hasn't died down in the hearts of Muslims after 14 centuries.
Shia Muslims never miss out on the 10-day mourning ceremonies for Imam Hussein. They say these rituals are meant to keep Imam Hussein's flag aloft and preserve his legacy for the generations to come. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Hundreds of supporters and lawmakers of the Pakistani Tehreek-e-Insaf party has filled the streets of the capital Islamabad in a show of support for the ousted Premier Imran Khan. They marched in Islamabad's red zone to protest the recent verdict issued by the country's electoral body that declared Khan's party has received illegal funds from foreign individuals and entities.
The charged protesters are not only demanding that Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and his cabinet step down, but also warning the United States to stay away from Pakistan's internal affairs.
The demonstrators criticized the role of Washington in Pakistan's politics, saying they are seeking independent foreign policy in Pakistan.
What they are doing to us with the drone attacks, the army men who are killed in our country, they just went for the, you know, the relief work, and after that the plane was crashed. It is just, I would say, it's the, you know, they're intervening in our country.
With the USA, some black sheep from Pakistan, they were also involved into all this procedure. That's why the real hero of Pakistan, Imran Khan, has to resign from his office. And now the question is why? Because Imran Khan, he said absolutely not to all their illegal and to all their unfair demands.
While addressing the protesters, Khan underlined that a fresh election is the only way to get rid of what he called the puppet regime.
The US staged a scripted drama for their own benefit in Pakistan, like to Pakistan and its foreign policy. So fresh elections are the only solution to get rid of this government.
On the other hand, the Pakistani government has filed a disqualification reference in Election Commission against Imran Khan. The government demands that the electoral body impose a lifetime ban on former premier as well as his political party. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iran's defense ministry has held an exhibition on its capabilities in knowledge-based production and economy. The event covers such fields as transportation, health and medical equipment, security, energy, information and communication technology, cyberspace, construction and mining, industry, petrochemicals, food security and agriculture, as well as household appliances, electronic parts and geographic data and information. In general, 1,100 products in various fields have been put on display at the exhibition.
The ministry's management team has been cooperating with more than 6,000 knowledge-based companies. The localization of products, expanding in-depth knowledge and technology, and creating synergy among the relevant institutions are on the ministry's agenda. The Defense Ministry is responsible for empowering and upgrading Iran's defense industry capabilities while using its knowledge to contribute to production of non-military products.
Iran has repeatedly voiced its readiness to provide advanced scientific and military technologies to friendly and neighboring states, because it has already achieved self-sufficiency and scientific capabilities in the field of military power and manufacturing state-of-the-art weaponry.
Holding such exhibitions will provide an opportunity to learn more about the potential and capacities of the private, knowledge-based companies and make use of their potentials for defense-related productions.
Meanwhile, Iran's defense minister has announced that in the coming days, his ministry would unveil a series of new defensive achievements.
According to Iranian officials, as a result of cooperation between Iran's defense ministry and knowledge-based companies, the capacity of the ministry for production has increased by over 20 times in the past couple of years. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Leading analysts gathered in Seoul, South Korea, and remotely from the United States to discuss North Korea's nuclear weapons program and the potential crisis should Pyongyang conduct a seventh nuclear test. Some admitted past strategies had failed and argued that North Korea's security concerns needed more attention and consideration.
We need to somehow address DPRK's strong motives for going nuclear. But what we did against DPRK was only strengthening DPRK's incentives to go nuclear.
North Korea suspended its nuclear and long-range missile testing following a 2018 summit between leader Kim Jong-un and former U.S. President Donald Trump. Now, years later, the U.S.-led sanctions Pyongyang had hoped to see removed remain in place. The discussion of North Korea's nuclear program comes as new South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol implements a more hardline approach to Pyongyang. President Yoon has called for the South's military to develop preemptive strike capabilities against the North as part of a so-called kill chain military strategy. President Yoon has also moved to restart suspended large-scale joint military exercises with the U.S., a move that Pyongyang has previously viewed as a provocation of war. The drills are scheduled to take place later this month. Meanwhile, many analysts believe such an approach will lead to greater tension.
The only way to address the risks of accident, misperception, or miscalculation is to try to manage deterrence through risk reduction. Limitations on military exercises, cessation of missile testing, force exclusion zones around the DMZ, sort of a mix of steps that both North Korea and South Korea and the United States would take in the conventional and strategic areas.
Experts also suggest a failure to reduce risks may encourage both South Korea and Japan to develop nuclear weapons themselves. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It took the Election Commission of Pakistan 7 years to conclude the illegal funding case against the party of former Prime Minister Imran Khan. The case that was filed by one of the founding members of Khan's Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party maintained that his party received illegal funds from foreign individuals and entities. In a 70-page judgment, the Election Commission confirmed that Tehreek-e-Insaf was guilty and concealed 16 bank accounts through which it accepted donations from foreigners or foreign groups.
I thank God that our 8-year struggle has paid off. I have no personal interest in this case. This is in the national interest that Pakistani political parties and their leadership must be subservient to the law.
The Election Commission also ruled that the former Prime Minister submitted false statements regarding his party's funding, but the party of Imran Khan has dismissed the charges.
We have been saying all along that this is not a case of foreign funding, but prohibited funding. Today's ruling has vindicated our stance that our political party has received no foreign funding.
The ruling comes over 3 months after Khan lost his office in a vote of no confidence in April. But Khan still insists he was ousted from power through a U.S.-backed conspiracy.
تو پاکستان میں کون سا بڑا کرائسس آیا تھا؟
واز دیر اینی کرائسس ان دی کنٹری وین دی یو ایس ٹاپلڈ اور گورنمنٹ اینڈ دوز ریسپانسبل ان پاکستان ٹو سٹاپ دس کنسپریسی ہیو ایکٹڈ ایز میئر اسپیکٹیٹرز
اور انہوں نے فیصلہ کیا کہ جی ہم کچھ نہیں کریں.
ڈسپائٹ بینگ آؤسٹڈ فرام پاور خانز پاپولیرٹی ہیز انکریزڈ. This was reflected in by-elections held recently in Punjab, where Khan's party swept the polls. The unexpected victory by Khan's party has allowed them to regain control of Punjab province.
There is no immediate fallout of the Election Commission's ruling on Khan and his party. Nevertheless, findings of the Election Commission may lead to legal challenges for the former Prime Minister. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.